Hello, everyone. Before we begin our new episode of Mormon Expression Voices, I just wanted everyone to be aware of the Strengthening Couples Workshop we have available. It is facilitated by Jenny Morrow, our family and marriage therapist. It's a 2.5-hour workshop that will focus on helping couples strengthen their relationship amidst religious transition and change. You can come as a couple or you can come alone. You will be discussing ways that you can work the differences out that exist when a couple goes through this type of situation and to help with healthy communication. So if you are interested in taking this workshop, it is either November 15th from 10 a.m. to 12:30, or you can take it on November 17th, which would be from 7 o'clock to 9:30 p.m. It's $25 per person. To reserve a spot, please send an email to lindsay@whitefieldseducational.org. And here we go with our new episode of Voices. Welcome to Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Katrine, and I am back here for another episode. Today we have with us Hillary. Hi, Hillary.
Hello.
Thank you for coming out to the studio to record tonight.
Yeah, definitely.
Hillary, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in two places. From when I was about 8 years old, I moved to San Diego, California, but I was originally in Draper, Utah. So I grew up in Draper and then moved to San Diego when I was 8. It was kind of an interesting time. My mom was diagnosed with being bipolar. And I remember in the middle of the night, my dad packed us up and moved us to California. And they had kind of a falling out between the two of them, but they didn't really tell us my dad didn't tell us why we were leaving, but he packed us up and moved us to San Diego.
So, wow, that must have been kind of traumatic.
Yeah, it was.
Eight.
It was, yeah. It was super traumatic. I remember I was going to, we had like a huge field trip that we were going to go on, like Hogle Zoo and all these different places, and then packed up and left. And then we moved out to California, so without my mom. Myself and my older sister, and then two of my younger siblings. So a brother and a sister.
Did any of your other siblings stay with your mom?
No. I'm not exactly sure of the timeline, but I remember at one point she was like put into like a psychiatric ward. So my family, or my brother and sisters and I, we just were in California and she was out here. I guess in retrospect, I found out that my mom didn't really know that we were leaving. So that was pretty tough for her, too.
Did you feel like it was kind of a kidnapping situation?
No, not at all. I didn't feel like that. I, like, trusted my dad, and he was, like, my favorite always growing up. So I was, like, his dad's girl, so. But I guess you could have called that in retrospect a little bit. But, yeah, kind of an interesting note to start off on, but, I think I've like come to terms with a lot of it and talk with my parents and kind of understand their story, and I respect like their kind of how they had to go through, I guess, and trying to understand, dealing with my mom's, you know, manic depression. And, but yeah, so we were, but my dad and then my brother and sisters were in, California.
So. Did they divorce after that?
They didn't. I think it was about a year that my mom was in Utah. And I remember my sister and I went out to visit her. And, she lived just downtown, worked for like a stamp company. And we really missed her and wanted her to come back. So like all the kids and my dad, we put together kind of like a memorabilia book, photo album, and, sent it to her. And like tried to convince her to come visit, So she came out to California and stayed, actually. And then my parents are actually still together and have been together ever since. So,
yeah. How long a span of time was that your mom was, until your mom was reunited with everyone?
I think it was, so I was about 8 years old. I'm 33. So I think I was maybe 9 or 10 when she came back. And then she got pregnant with one of my siblings. And I think they just stayed together to, you know, that they love each other, you know, been working through some issues together. So, so we had, my little sister came along. But it actually was kind of a little bit traumatic when my mom first came. I remember she'd have like extreme highs and lows. I remember like being little and my mom like running as fast as she could, like up and down the street and then coming back in the house. And I remember one time she said, "Oh, we should be blood sisters," and like cut our wrists and
some pretty
intense, moments. Like, and when you're younger, you didn't really understand, but, and I think I kind of resented her a lot, not knowing. My impression was my mom left us, even though we packed up and moved without telling her where we were, or my dad did, you know, but I just had kind of developed like some barriers with my mom growing up with the manic depression. And then when my little sister was born, I remember taking care of her a lot because my mom would go either like extreme highs or like really, really deep depression. We wouldn't get out of bed. So my sister, older sister and I would do a lot of the, I'm sorry, I'm crying, but do a lot of like the taking care of my siblings, you know? So it was kind of like a interesting childhood with housekeeper nannies, and they would kind of step in to try and help out. There was times where my dad wouldn't even let her by herself. You know, he had to take her to work with her because he was afraid of what she would do.
Yeah, it's traumatic, and that kind of childhood shapes your whole life. Unfortunately, it's always something that you view life through.
Right. And I think too, which is interesting, not to like totally skip ahead, but going on my mission, I had like a pretty traumatic mission, which I'll tell you about, but I was able to like finally relate to my mom at that time. So I'm like really happy and grateful I went on a mission because I was finally able to like connect with her finally after as many years apart. But basically, so we kind of had a, we grew up in San Diego, and I went, had a really fun kind of childhood despite kind of stuff at home. Older sister was funny. She was gothic growing up, you know, so she was always like rebellious, always wanted to stay out late. And I was like the really like obedient child and didn't question anything. I would try to like always please my parents, you know, clean the house and keep things babysit all the time. And
Were you raised in the church?
Yeah, we all were. My parents were converts, and all of us were baptized in the church, yeah.
Now, I know a lot of people that experience mental illness go to church leaders for help. Mm-hmm. Was that ever done in your family situation?
I'm sure. I actually don't know.
You don't know.
I really don't know kind of the dynamics of my mom's experience with the church totally. And she doesn't go to church, hasn't been for a couple of years, but...
But you would consider your family active growing up?
Yeah, we were all active. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all active. Went to school. We were always known as like the Mormon crew, the MCs. Like in high school, we had really, and there was, we were really tight knit group of kids. I don't know. In San Diego, really good atmosphere, like really close to with all of them still. They're pretty much family, like everyone down in San Diego, the 7th Ward. So. It was a fun, actually, I had a really good childhood in that regard, like after kind of things settled down, mm-hmm. being there for a while. Yeah. And then when I was 16, I had a couple more siblings come along, but my youngest brother was diagnosed with autism. And my mom and dad did research, mostly my mom, about the special education system, and San Diego was rated the worst in the nation. So we packed up in a month and moved back to Salt Lake or not to Salt Lake, but to Provo area, Alpine, and to get him involved because they wouldn't even accept him in like the special education system in San Diego. So we were kind of forced to like relocate back here.
And why back to Utah? Was there family here?
Yeah, we all were from here, grew up here. And then I think the special education system in Utah is one of the better programs. We were able to get him back into a program to help him. So we all relocated back. And my dad actually has a construction business and continued to commute for almost like 10 years back and forth, fly back and forth.
From San Diego?
To San Diego, yeah. So from Alpine to San Diego almost every week, every other week. So
I imagine if he was able to do that, your mom had kind of leveled out maybe.
Right, yeah. She did pretty good, like off and on, as much as I remember. You know, she would go on medication, off medication, and she was doing fairly well, except for maybe that first traumatic year. But I still like had no relationship with her. My dad and I were always really, really close, and I talked to him almost daily about everything. And yeah, so then we would just move back to Alpine.
So what high school did you go to?
Oh, unfortunately, I went to Lone Peak High School. It was the first year it opened, and I actually was really excited because my best friend in San Diego had just moved 2 years prior from Alpine, and I'd met a bunch of her friends. And so I was really excited like to move to Alpine because I already had friends. I already knew a bunch of people. But when I got there, they weren't my friends and they weren't really nice. Aww. And yeah, it wasn't cool at all. So I was actually friends with like a French exchange student. Yeah. For the first year. She was rad. We're still way good friends. And but I went to Lone Peak, had a good experience. And then I finally met like a friend through the French exchange student at the end of the year. A few people. She was like a little more social than I was and outgoing. So through her, I met some friends for my senior year. One was a kid named Bryce, and I had a friend named Reen and Jason. We all kind of hung out. And my senior year, I started to date. I was best friends with this kid named Jason. We dated the very end of my senior year. I'd never really been kissed before or anything, or really dated anyone. And he kissed me like my senior year, like right before prom. I was all excited and Twitter pated. And we actually were really close and, you know, became really close. And he'd write me like love letters and bring me flowers. And that's kind of where I started to like really, I think, try more in the church. Because he was getting ready for a mission.
Did you ever have that moment where you're thinking, you know, I come all this way to Utah where they're all Mormons and nobody will be my friend. I thought we're all supposed to be friends in the church. Did you ever?
Oh yeah.
Feel that way?
Oh yeah, completely. I was shocked actually because in San Diego, we were like the Mormon crew, MCs, and we were all friends and we were so close and we'd always hang out together and do everything, go bowling and just had tons of fun. And so I was so excited to come here. And then I was shocked when I had like zero, like no one. I was just like, wow, like they are not very nice here. I was surprised. I don't think I really took too much of it to heart. Except for I was just like really bummed. And I was actually just more bummed that I didn't have like the friends that I had met through my friend. They weren't my friend. So I just, I guess I figured it was Utah culture.
Yeah. So you get close to Jason and he's going on a mission. So you think you should be the good Mormon.
Exactly.
Girl waiting for him.
Right. I know we talked about marriage like a ton, but ironically, he didn't really let anyone know we were dating. It was kind of like a secret sort of thing, but I was super naive.
Jason. You were doing so well.
I know, right? I was super naive and he was like my first love. So of course I was like all excited to like marry him and I felt like confirmations that I was going to end up marrying him. And so he was leaving at the end of our senior year. He's a little bit older. I had applied to go to BYU and it was the only school I applied to because my dad went there as he played football. And I just did everything my dad did, you know. So I just kind of, we were really close though. So he went on a mission to Venezuela. And I told, he asked me to wait for him. And I said, yeah, I would. But I was still like a little bit of a wild child, kind of fun. Like I was really good, but I was always like into toilet papering and, you know, like the harmless kind of activities.
That's funny that that's your wild childhood.
Yeah, that was
toilet papering.
I know, right? Like, so like in college, I had similar kind of fun experiences. Like when he was in the MTC, I was in college. So he would like, we'd kind of like sneak out and I'd bring him Taco Bell or something. You know, like, but we would never like hold hands or whatever, but you know, just we try to keep them, the rules, which totally broke all of them, but yeah. But, so it was kind of a fun time. Yeah, I remember like the first when he was leaving, you know, we'd write and I'd send him packages and I think I wrote him at least 2 letters every week, at least for his whole mission and sent him a package at least once a month, you know, and he'd write me back equally and he would tell me, you know, oh, we're going to get married and everything and throughout the whole, pretty much the whole mission. So, yeah.
And how was BYU? Did you like it there?
I actually didn't really like BYU, but I had two of my really good guy friends from San Diego, the 7th Ward, Adam and Drew showed up. It was fun to be like reunited with some of my friends from San Diego. And so we had our first year together. I thought it was just really big and I felt like a number. I didn't like it. I really didn't like it, but it was fun because my buddies were there. And when they left to go on their missions, I decided to transfer and go to Snow College. I just didn't really want to stay there when I didn't have my buddies there. So I left and went down to Snow.
The party school.
Yeah, right. But it was actually the opposite for me. Instead of being like a party, I actually became like the most, I guess, spiritual, you could say, in my experience.
So there was no more toilet papering.
not really. Although we did, oh man, I shouldn't even admit this, but we did go shoot rabbits because there was tons of rabbits. Oh, geez. And we would.
Because you're in the middle of nowhere.
Right. There was so many. And we were kind of hellions a little bit with some of my guy friends. I usually hung out with guys. We had a fun time. I had a little short bed truck. So we'd like throw them in the back of the short bed truck and play pranks on girls all the time with these rabbits. It was horrible, but, but it was fun. Like I transferred down there and, decided to like become the perfect wife in preparation for Jason coming home. And I think at that time was where I really like delve into like just being trying to be the perfect person possible down there. Like having a bunch of callings. Like I was Stake Relief Society president and I think I was a war genealogist and I also worked with, I can't remember all the callings, but I had a bunch of them and I was super dedicated to those.
You are anxiously waiting for Jason.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling this isn't going to end well for poor Jason.
No, it doesn't. During my time at Snow, I think Jason was liked the Hillary that was a little bit crazy and wild. And he didn't really change a whole lot, but I started to change, if that makes sense. So I remember I would start just like praying about everything, like what I would wear, what streets I would drive down, just becoming like over the top, like obsessed with like having spiritual experiences and bearing my testimony and finding people to like teach. I think wanting to relate to him, but he was like pretty relaxed and chill, would always goof around, but I became like way more serious than he was. The week he left for his mission, his best friend and I, we worked at the same store in Salt Lake Recreation Outlet. And he asked me, he's like, to go on a road trip with him. I was like, oh, sure, you know. And I remember on the road trip, he kissed me, and I felt so guilty about it.
Like, was this before the mission or after?
This was, like, right at the beginning of Jason's mission. So it,
okay.
So Forrest and Jason were really good buddies. Okay. We all worked together at this little outdoor store. And then we went to, on this road trip, and on this road trip, Forrest kissed me, and I remember feeling super guilty, even though I told him, like, no, you know, I was waiting for Jason. And then, like, I remember when it was kind of getting towards the end of the mission, I, like, wanted to confess to him, you know, like, rid myself of all these sins. And I remember writing him and being terrified, like, I knew he was going to break up with me because, like, his friend had kissed me, and, you know, he was pretty much like, Hillary, chill out, you know, whatever. But I remember, like, just sobbing over it and being, like, so, like, dramatic. And, you know, at that time, I hadn't, like dated anyone because I was super faithful and just, you know, doing my little marching along and just trying to become the best wife. You know, like, I think, just trying to, like, learn how to do crafty things and just silly little cultural things that the church kind of breeds.
Do you feel that this personality change of yours was an effect of what you were getting from church, or do you think that was just part of your personality?
I definitely think it was the church and the culture. I think I enjoyed the spiritual high of being really good at something, and I was really good at being Mormon. And I really liked, I think, when people would appreciate me or say, wow, Hillary, you're so spiritual, or I wish, you know, or like fathers would be like, I want my son to marry someone like you. And so it kind of reaffirmed this experience I was going through and the change that I was making because I was in the culture of it. But it slowly, my personality started to diminish at the same time. And I started becoming someone I wasn't. It was really, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Yeah.
And when your personality showed up, you'd start to feel guilty that you weren't doing the good Mormon thing. Or is that saying too much?
No, I think that's probably accurate. Like, I felt guilty about everything. there was one period of time where I was down at Snow, and I remember thinking, I've got to, like, get rid of every sin that I've ever done. And I thought of everything, you know, just, like, thoughts that I had against friends, and I would call them and tell them, apologize, and I just wanted to, like, be this, like, Snow White figure, just, mm-hmm. like, pure, no sins, and it was excessive. It wasn't balanced at all. I did have a really good friend named Ben too, and we became really close down there, and he had a different experience than mine and was kind of leaning on me, whereas he was, you know, had just gotten through drug rehab and alcohol rehab, and we became really close, and he saw, like, the strength I had, and we just became really good friends. And so nothing ever romantic, just totally good friends. But that's where I just became the most Mormon, I guess you could say.
Jason forgave you for kissing Forrest.
Yes.
Did he come home and missionary hug?
Yeah, really. So it was about time for him to come home. The summer before he left, I think it was like late summer. So he came back late summer in August. And the beginning of the summer, I had this feeling, you know, that I should go spend the summer with my grandma. I was going to go hike the Olympic coast with my school, but I was like, okay, you know, if I had like a thought like that, I would just go with it. So I went and lived with her, for the summer.
Where was that at?
Draper, Utah. So I just came up, spent the summer with her and, organized her whole house. And she wanted me to go through all of her memorabilia and pictures and like delineate to which kid it went to. So I did that, organized everything. And then the end of the summer, she had surgery she was going in for, and actually got staph infection after the surgery. Surgery went fine, but had died at the end of the summer. It was the week that Jason was coming home, was her funeral. So it was just like really awkward. it was horrible to have my grandma pass. At the same time, like, I felt like I was super glad that I went, stayed with her and went with that feeling. But he was coming home from a mission. I was mourning. She was probably like my dad. It was my dad's mom and we were super close. She was an amazing lady, but she had passed and then I was mourning a loss and he was coming home. And, when he came home, the week of the funeral, I asked him to come with me. And he said no because my friend Ben was going to be there. You know, he's just like a guy friend, but I don't know why. And then my friend Ben didn't want to step on Jason's toes, so he didn't go. So I felt like just kind of abandoned a bit.
Yeah. Where are your friends when you need them?
Right.
That's awful.
I know Ben felt really bad, but I don't know about Jason. And then the night of the funeral, and I had gotten together with Jason's mom and made this like jean quilt over the summer too.
That used to be really popular.
I know. We're like, welcome home. Have a jean quilt.
There are a lot of newlywed people that got those for gifts.
Right? They're so funny. So I like gotten together with his mom over the summer as well when I was draper and just made this jean quilt. And the night of the funeral, I went over to see him. And, I went to his homecoming. I think it was Sunday and then the funeral was a few days later and I went to see him and give him this jean quilt. And I remember that night he broke up with me. It was just like horrible. Like I gave him this jean quilt I'd made. It was like my grandma's funeral that day. And then he like broke up with me and
oh, man, Jason,
I know.
Jason, if you're listening, you're a jerk.
I think it was rightfully, I was different. I had changed, mm-hmm. You know, I had become like this weird, like robot of a girl, you know, just totally all the church was all I cared about. And he was pretty easygoing but it still was pretty like heartbreaking. I mean, and even though he broke up with me, I knew that we would end up together anyway because of like the promptings I'd felt, you know, and the confirmation. So I wasn't too worried about it and I kind of just went along with it.
Well, it makes me sad for you. That must have been a really hard week.
It was. It was. And I think to top it off too, then he went to Rick's and I went to Snow, back down to Snow for my next year. And his next girlfriend ended up being named Hillary, his first girlfriend too. And that just like put a knife through my heart again. But I don't know why I kept talking to him, but I did. I would talk to him and we'd write emails and it was just torturous, but I just knew we were going to be together. So I continued with the process. So of just writing and talking to him all the time. I think it was just when email came out. So we'd write emails, you know, barely. And at that time, I'd met another guy named Justin, and I had studied Japanese for like 6 years and was an exchange student in Japan in high school. And this kid had went on his mission to Japan, and he like really liked me a lot, but I just like didn't feel like it was right. And I remember him talking about like marrying me, and I remember praying about it and getting the answer that I should marry him, but I couldn't do it. Like that was the only time I remember like not listening to a prompting, and I couldn't do it because I felt like so conflicted with Jason. And so instead I ran away and put in a mission application. That was kind of my way out.
Okay. So your mission was your escape plan.
Exactly. Yeah. So I could become even better Mormon. Jason would fall in love with me even more and Justin would go away. And,
do you see how your plan was flawed?
In retrospect? Completely.
Just
at the time, I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. You're not the only one that's had that plan before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you're doing the Lord's work, why would not He not bless you with these things you want, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. I thought, well, I'm doing His work and they'll be provided away. So, exactly.
So how long did it take till Jason stopped writing you?
Actually, we remained friends throughout.
Oh, okay.
So we kept in touch constantly. I got my mission call. I think it was like at the end of the year, after he came back. And I was going to Taiwan speaking Mandarin, so Chinese, which was like a shock.
Yeah. Why didn't they send you to Japan?
I think now I know, because I feel like my mission was exactly what I needed, but I was shocked too. Like, I spent 6 years studying Japanese. Like, I was there as an exchange student, and I just thought, well, maybe it's because I know this hard language that the Lord thinks that I'm ready for another really hard language. And so I will just do it. You know, I'll be the best Mandarin speaker there is. So I just had complete confidence that it was exactly what God wanted. So I went with it, I guess. I had to.
Yes, not much choice.
Right.
I like to ask people what their first time through the temple was like.
Oh, yeah. I think as soon as I got my mission call, I immediately went through the steps to get my endowments. I went through the temple. I was really excited. I didn't think anything of it. I just was excited. I was like, this is great. You know, I'm doing exactly what I need to be doing. You know, I did think like the washing and anointings was a little weird. Like, cause I think like the old lady, like, accidentally pushed my boob or something, and it made me like a little uncomfortable. I remember feeling like really sweaty, slimy from like the oil, you know? So it was a little, I was just like, felt a little awkward at that, but I was just ready to do anything, you know? This was totally fine with me, and I knew it was like God's plan, so it didn't matter. Like, even though it's pretty awkward, you know, experience. So, yeah. And I remember before I even went on the, I think I went to the temple like twice a day, every day. I mean, I was that like out of balance.
You were Mormon.
Yeah. I was super out of balance. And again, I understand why Jason was like, I don't think it's going to work out.
You didn't want to go to the temple twice a day.
No, exactly.
So you entered the MTC.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a good experience?
Yeah. Oh, this is actually crazy. Right before I went to the MTC, I went... Jason and his new girlfriend came. We had a window
Hillary?
Washing. Yes.
Hillary met Hillary?
No, not Hillary. It was another girl, Rachel.
Oh, okay.
And so Rachel came down. We had a window washing company together. We'd wash windows in the summer, Jason and I. This is so weird that we actually had our friendship.
How did that happen when you lived in different cities?
He came home. So after snow, we both came back to Alpine and okay. We'd wash windows. Okay. And I didn't go on my mission till the summer, like July. So we had a little bit of time. We'd wash windows to earn money.
Okay.
So anyway, his girlfriend came and we went down to Spring City. My parents have a house down there, which is right by Snow College. And we washed the windows of this house. And I remember just kind of like just going along with, and his girlfriend was there, you know, and we had finished late. And so we were like, oh, we'll just spend the night here and then finish in the morning. So that night we jumped on some four-wheelers and we went up the canyon. When we got to the top, there was snow, so we decided to turn around. I remember she was like, I want to drive the four-wheeler down. There was two four-wheelers. I was on one, and they were on the other. And so they switched places, and we turned around, and I remember thinking, like, this girl is not going to beat me down this hill. There's no way. I'm not going to let her. You know, it was like kind of like the better girlfriend syndrome or whatever. Like, I'm the better... So we jumped on the four-wheelers and we took off like super fast down the mountain. And before, I don't even remember this, but I flew off of like a 30-foot cliff and hit a tree head on. It was like middle of the night, you know, snow. And they came around the same corner, flew off the same cliff, hit a tree like within like a couple inches from me. Whoa. We both slid down and totally both of us were all knocked unconscious. And Jason came to first, tried to wake us up, couldn't. And then Rachel woke up next and she said, when I was like out of it, I was like praying the whole time out loud, but I wasn't like conscious. And I was just asking God to help us and stuff. And then I woke up and I remember feeling like, cold because we were in the snow. We'd fallen in. And I said, Rachel, like, we got to get out of here. I'm really cold, you know? And she's like, I can't move. And I was like, okay. So I picked her up and like carried her down the mountain. And Jason had gone to go get help. The four-wheelers weren't. So he ran down the mountain and, the ambulance light came up and like finally came up and saw us, and my face had like been completely, like I had a helmet, but it was the open face one. So like the tree branches totally like jacked up my face, and my eye was like full of blood. And, but Rachel, like when Jason was right on the back, like smashed her into the four wheeler and punctured her lung and broke like 3 ribs.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, that was like a crazy experience, but I remember like feeling so grateful that I had my garments on. And I remember being like, oh, like I'm protected and I'm saved because I had my garments on. And so, like shortly after that, like maybe a couple weeks after that, I went into the MTC. I remember I just looked really messed up because my face was like super scratched and like my eyes were, yeah, like full of blood still. I looked like super creepy, I'm sure. But yeah, we went
Sister
in.
Mr. Hillary's ready to serve.
Yeah. Yeah, I went in. It was really exciting for me. I was really happy to be there. It was the day before 4th of July, so it was July 3rd. And so the next night we had fireworks, so it was pretty, it was like a great, like, welcome to the MTC, you know? But yeah, the MTC was, it was challenging. It was a challenging. We obviously were there the longest. We were learning Chinese. We were there for 3 months, and I could not pick it up. I mean, it was super, I just could not get it. It was super confusing. It's tonal language, so it's more audio. Japanese is very like monosyllabic. And I was a little, it's more a little mathematical, I think, for me, but Chinese was just crazy. I couldn't grasp it at all. And, my mission companion and I were like pretty good friends, but she was kind of similar to me, like a really, really, really good Mormon, and like had memorized like every scripture possible and had her cute little like scriptures underlined and color coordinated. And I just felt inadequate because I wasn't like that, you know. But she, I love Joe. Love you, Joe. But, she, we got along pretty good. So I don't know. That was kind of the MTC.
So it sounds like it was in pretty much a good experience besides the language.
Yeah.
The MTC.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You take off for Taiwan, right?
Yep, exactly. Yep. I was in Kaohsiung. Mm-hmm. And we got on island is what they called it. Came on island, and I was stayed in Kaohsiung and had a trainer who's awesome. And I also was in the same apartment with my MTC companion, Joe, and her companion. So there were 4 of us together.
Oh.
So that was really nice.
That's going to be pretty rare that you're with your MTC companion once you get out, right?
Right. And I think it was because Joe's companion was a native, and she was super mean. She was just known as, like, the meanest missionary. She was just horrible. And so it was nice to be able to, like, come home and be able to, like, have that camaraderie for her, too. So I was glad that we were together. So we were almost together for like 6 months. We became pretty good friends, really close. At that time, still writing Jason, you know, throughout the whole thing. He sent me tons of letters in the MTC and everything. And when I was with my trainer.
But did he bring you Taco Bell at the MTC?
No, such an ass. No, he didn't. I should make him do that sometime. yeah, he didn't. But he did write me a ton. And then when I was with my trainer, I got his wedding announcement.
Ow.
Dang it, right?
Ouch.
But ironically, I still believe we were going to be together somehow. That my convictions were that strong. And I was like, oh, he'll just get a divorce or something. And he had married the girl, Rachel. So the one with the car, the four-wheeler accident. And I remember, I wasn't sure if it was shortly. I think it was shortly after that time. I had my first doubt in God that he existed. And I think it was probably because Jason was marrying someone else, not me.
After you'd worked so hard to be such a good person, he was denying you Jason.
Exactly. Yeah. I had my first doubt, and I actually met with the mission president to talk about it because it pretty like rattled me. I'd never had any doubts in my whole life. And so I remember he like just, I think he gave me a blessing. And
so were you telling him that you were doubting God, or are you just telling him how hard a time you're having because of Jason?
No, I told him that I was doubting God.
Okay.
It was a really bad play on my part because from that point on, I was labeled as a troubled missionary. and got slapped, labeled right then and there. And it was just the very beginning. But I worked through it, and I remember that doubt went away. And I just was like, I'll just prove it to God, you know. And I would wake up at like 3:30 in the morning to study Chinese because, not Japanese, Chinese, because I was struggling so horrifically with it. I could not get it down. I couldn't understand it. And at that time, I know some missions have changed, but during my mission, we had to memorize all the discussions, like word for word, pass them off before you could learn any other additional language. You had to memorize, I think there was like 5 or 6 discussions, and there was like several principles in each. You had to memorize each. And I was trying to memorize and trying to memorize, and I couldn't get it down. I couldn't understand it. I mean, I was like horrible at Chinese. It was horrible. So I never passed off any discussions when I was with my trainer. I was feeling pretty low. So then I went on to become companions with Jetta, who actually told me about Mormon expressions, and she's had emailed me her story, and that's why kind of I'm here today.
Yeah, I should have looked up what I was actually looking at today, and I should have looked to see what number Jetta was on Mormon Expression Voices, but you can look her up if you want to listen to Jetta's story.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like 87.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think so.
So check in the 80s for Jetta.
And, yeah.
Okay, so you become companions with Jetta. That must have been kind of a, I would think, a warm welcome.
Yeah, she was wonderful. Yeah, Jetta was amazing and so nice. And I was her first junior companion, and she became a trainer really early. She had picked up Chinese really quickly, and she was like a spiritual giant. Like, all the sisters in my mission were incredible. They all were super diligent and just obedient. And the elders too. We didn't really have a problem mission. Like, our problem was we all were like trying to be super righteous. It was interesting. It wasn't like the South American missions, you know. We were one of the better ones. So
I did not know there was a competition between China and Taiwan and South America.
I don't think there was either, and I didn't know of it, but I've just heard stories. At least Jason's mission seemed like he had some trouble. He had some kind of interesting experiences down there, but so became companions with Jetta, and I was super depressed at the time. I remember just couldn't pick up the language, and she was just super encouraging, but I was just down on myself and down on myself. And we were just together for a short time, and I honestly don't have a lot of recollection of my mission in general. I think I've blocked a lot of it out because I was pretty depressed like the whole time. And I think it was because I had come from like Snow College and having like 3 major callings and everything. And then I came to a mission where I couldn't speak the language. I was a junior companion. I wasn't excelling, like getting those spiritual highs that.
Yeah, you'd built your life around being a super Mormon. Mm-hmm. And now you're at the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah.
And couldn't even talk to people.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't talk to anyone. And we weren't supposed to even talk to our companions in English. We were always to use Chinese. So I sucked. I totally sucked. So I was with her, and then I transferred to another area. It's really the smallest area of the mission. And I think the mission president did that on purpose just because he wanted me out of his hair. And it was just in the mountains in Qishan, and became companions with a girl that was her last transfer. So she was going home. And it was terrifying because knowing that I had to like learn the roads and all the members and the names and the streets, like I was scared. So, but she left and I got a new companion, and I still hadn't passed off my discussions at this point either. And my new companion, we didn't really get along. She was from like an only child, didn't really have a father figure in her life. From Canada, she's Filipino. And I remember thinking we were so different because I was from like a family of 7 kids and like parents together. And we were just completely opposite. Like, I wanted to keep, like, on P-Day, preparation day, I wanted to keep, like, I would wanted to just write letters or pray more, or, and she wanted to go shopping. And I remember we just, like, butt heads. And, like, I remember feeling just And she just kept telling me how bad my Chinese was, like, all the time. I mean, it was horrible, but I took that as, like, I suck. I'm horrible. I'm horrible. And I think I felt like she told me every day that she hated me. Mm-hmm. She might not have, but I remember that feeling of just, like, I'm the worst, you know? And we didn't really get along either. We didn't talk or anything. I mean, we were just opposite. One morning during scripture study, the mission president called me too, and he was asking me, he didn't like me, and I knew that, but I just got the feeling. But one morning he called and he said, Sister Hillary, why are you teaching false doctrine? And I remember thinking,
I can't even speak Chinese. Why are you teaching false doctrine?
That was like, in like retrospect, I'm like, yeah, of course I was teaching false doctrine because I couldn't even speak Chinese. So whatever came out of my mouth, I'm sure was false doctrine. But I remember like,
sorry,
yeah.
I'm going to interrupt you there.
No, it's so true though. You know what I mean? It totally is. And, I remember thinking to myself immediately, I must be teaching false doctrine. Like, because I believed everything that the leaders told me.
So you immediately took it on yourself and didn't even question it.
I didn't even question it. Like, I was like, I was confused. And I remember hanging up the phone with him. I don't even remember the conversation, talking to my companion and being like, the President Young wants us to, you know, he told me that I'm teaching false doctrine. And she goes like, well, you are. And I remember thinking, what? You know, and I don't even remember the conversation, but I just remember like, okay, I guess I'm teaching false doctrine. I need to change. Like, it was
Did you ever find out what it was that they thought you were teaching?
No, I had already been like slapped and labeled as, you know, trouble. So, and I, at that point I had been on the mission for 7.5 months is when he had called me, you know, and, we had been together for 3 months and it was just like a weird time. And I remember like my doubts kind of started to like kind of surface at that point because we were teaching love and acceptance and the gospel. And I was feeling like nothing of the sorts, just feeling sadness and rejection. So move day came along. My companion and I were really excited because we're like, we've been together for 3 months. We're definitely getting moved apart. We're sick of each other. We're done. And we waited and waited. No phone calls. So we called the office and we're like, so you guys forgot to call us. Which one of us is going? Like, we'd both packed our bags. And they're like, we've decided that you guys need to stay together. And we were just so pissed, both of us, like super frustrated.
Did they know that you were having a hard time with each other?
Yeah. I don't think I wrote it in my letters. I know it was coming from her, but maybe not me. Cause I tried to like avoid saying anything of the truth. Cause I would just sugarcoat everything. Like, I'm fine. I'm doing great. You know, no problems. Just that was kind of like my letter to the president. But I'm pretty sure she was saying like I was pain in the ass or she didn't like me.
She's teaching false doctrine.
Yeah. Yeah. Ironically, to this day, we're like really good friends after the mission. I don't know. That's a whole other part. But anyway, so we left that day. Neither of us were getting moved. And we went out street contacting. I remember I talked to someone and I remember starting to kind of get the Chinese a little bit, but he had a belief in God. And so I just skipped on to Joseph Smith to tell him about it. And she got really mad at me. You can't skip parts. You can't skip ahead, you know? And I remember I'm just like, well, whatever. He knows about God. So I'm just going to talk about Joseph Smith. And, we got in this big fight. She started crying and that made me even more mad because I felt like I was the one that had been persecuted or like yelled at the whole time. And she was crying and it made me mad, like that she was crying. So I took off on my bike and of course she had to follow me because can't leave, can't separate. We got to like the middle of town. It's a small town, but we got to the middle and she rolls up next to me. We're at a stoplight and she's just crying. And I remember I was just like super angry and I'm like, forget it. Like, I'm so mad at you. I'm so angry. And then she got mad. And then we were both like, do you want to fight? Like, let's fight. And so we, so we got off our bikes and we went to like an alley and we both like wound up our fists, like ready to punch each other. And I think she got scared of me because I'm not like a big girl, but I'm not petite, but she was really petite and tiny, you know, and I just scared her to death. Like, cause I was ready to punch her in the face. Like I didn't even care. Like, so just done.
Sorry. It's not funny. I can't imagine the stress that led you both here, but I just envision two sister missionaries in the alleyway ready to go at it.
Stress? No stress. Not the stress of or weight of salvations of souls. Nothing like that. I know, right? It was ridiculous. But so she got totally scared of me, you know, backed away. And I remember we cried and hugged. And like at that point, she had this kind of respect for me. And she, I think it was like a fear. And so, I think it was a fear. I'm pretty sure it was a fear. Like if like she did something that I didn't like, I would just like look at her and like she would just back away. And we like kind of kept our distance. We were able to kind of be like companions without like interact. I don't know. It was interesting.
It sounds like you were able to communicate finally.
Yeah. Took a fist fight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that makes me sad though that these two people are put in this position and there's no way out.
Right.
You're just stuck.
Right. Yeah. We were. And you can't talk to the elders because then you're labeled as one of those girls. Like,
plus they kind of want to see the cat fight.
Right. They would have loved it. And the elders for my mission at that point, I'm still way good friends with them too. Like I love them both. Like we were still really close, but couldn't really talk to, you know what I mean? Like anyway. During that time, we got a phone, we got an announcement from the office that, and our mission president was sick, kind of. They had diagnosed him with diabetes, but, it turned out that they misdiagnosed him. He actually had intestinal cancer. And, when they found out, he only had about 3 months to live. And he's just from Sandy. And I remember being okay with that, I guess, because I didn't like him. He didn't like me. And, not to be like disrespectful or anything, but I really, like, he really made me feel like nothing most of the time. So we had like a big, huge get together with all the missionaries to say our goodbye. So we had like a farewell for him. At the end of the farewell, we all walked out, shook his hand. And the last thing he told me was, you know, Sister Hillary, I hope you can make something of yourself. And it was just kind of, it's horrible, you know? It was just like the last thing you could say, the last fucking thing you could say was, I hope you can make something of yourself. Like, such an asshole to say something like that to like someone that was trying so hard. And there was a few of us that like he got that from. Just, I don't know. It was just, I still, I've let go of the anger and hatred I have towards him, but it's still such like a part of me that keeps me out of the church, I guess, because of like the authority and the leadership he has and to have like unrighteous dominion over people to say things like that, that completely destroyed someone's, is so unfair. And to be like a person that believed everything that the mission president said and anything that the priesthood would say was just bullshit, you know? It just was bullshit that he had said something like that to me. But I took it to heart, you know? I was like, oh yeah, I guess hopefully I can make something of myself.
So you didn't even have a bullshit moment at the time?
No, zero. Just took it. You're right. And I remember talking to my companion and not really getting any empathy or, you know, it was still of that. It was just kind of like, yeah, well, hopefully you can, because you haven't even passed off your discussions at this point, you know? So he left and went home. He died shortly after with his family. And then the new emergency mission president came on. He was, just an interim president while they found like a replacement. And, he came on and transferred me out of the mission to be with Nicole. And I loved her. I mean, she was like the happiest, most like amazing, loving, caring person. And I was like, I remember just feeling like a weight finally lifted off me. Like after being on the mission for 13 and a half months. And then I finally became companions with someone that like told me that they loved me and gave me hugs and just didn't care that my Chinese sucked. You know, she just like appreciated me. It was such a relief. And the mission president that came on, President Watson, was really like, didn't care about the numbers, which President Young did. He was really militant and forced that kind of aspect of it. And President Watson was just like, we called him Watson Baba, which instead of even calling him like president, we called him like dad, just because he was like such a good man. But at that point, like my self-esteem, my beliefs had all started to like deteriorate, like little by little. And it started like when I was in Xishan.
I would think that it wouldn't be so easy to trust another mission president after going through the last experience. I don't think that would come easily either.
I think I'm maybe forgetful or something because I was I'm very trusting and I forgot and I immediately like opened up to him.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Do you think he sent you to be with Nicole? Is that her name?
Yeah.
Said?
Uh-huh.
Do you think that was intentional or just happened?
I thought it was all divinely inspired.
Divinely.
Okay. Still, yeah. But at that point, I remember having like little beliefs leave me constantly. And I remember praying every day, begging God not to take them from me. Because I felt like he was taking my beliefs from me. It was like a weird... And I didn't tell this to my family. I didn't tell it to anyone because you can't, right? You can't really say stuff like that. So I didn't. And I was with Sister Nicole. And we were teaching at Joseph Smith one night. And I remember starting to cry. She thought I was feeling the spirit. And it was because I, at that point, remember not being able to say, I believe in Joseph Smith. Like, I remember him not feeling like he was a prophet. I came home that night and I finally told her and I said, I told her that I wasn't crying because I was feeling the spirit, but because I didn't believe in Joseph Smith. And she like sobbed with me and she said, we'll fast and pray. So she was just like, we'll figure it out, you know? And I was like, okay. So I remember falling asleep that night on my knees, you know, praying, just keep that one, God. Let me keep that one in my quiver. You know, I need that one. But then sure enough, the next morning I woke up and it was gone. You know? So, and I was only with her for 6 weeks and I was so bummed because I still hadn't passed off I think I had passed off my discussions with her. The new president said whatever I found out later that he told the elders, I don't care how poorly she does, pass her off. I don't care. Just get her done. And that was like, finally I started having a little bit of confidence, you know? So it was really nice of him to be able to like at least give me some self-esteem. And I was still a junior at this point. So I was, I guess, out for almost a year. And I still was a junior companion. And then I think it was beyond that. Yeah, it was definitely beyond that. It was like, it was maybe like 15 months. Yeah. So I was still a junior companion. And sisters only serve for 18. So I was then immediately transferred to another area. As soon as this new mission president came on, I was made a senior companion with a native. I was scared because my Chinese was so bad. But surprisingly, she actually understood me. So I guess I didn't have as bad of Chinese as I thought. But
it was the other people trying to learn Chinese that couldn't understand you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that was like interesting. She understood me. And at that point though, my testimony had started to like completely leave, but I knew how to be a missionary. So I was just like going through the motions.
Plus, she a pretty good companion for you?
Yeah. Think? She was so sweet. Good. She was like just a sweetheart. Totally just awesome. And Sister Huang. And then, when I was with her, we went to a discussion at the church and I remember like every day, like beliefs would just leave. Like, I remember thinking, oh, please, no, I don't want that one to leave. But we got to the church and we were sitting, teaching, and I sat there and I remember just like a complete darkness overcoming me. And I remember feeling Like, I didn't have even an ounce of light in me, that every single belief that I had ever believed in my entire life was gone.
All right, so you're a Mormon. You know that means that Satan has influence over you, right?
I didn't ever consider it that because I was such a good person.
Okay, good.
I mean, I really was. I don't think... I didn't know what it was. I just thought it was God punishing me.
Wow, you took everything on.
Yeah, everything. Totally. And I left that night, like, just beside myself. And I couldn't explain it to my companion well enough. My Chinese wasn't that good. So we, like, rode over to, like, the telephones, because we had these, like, telephone cards that we'd use to make phone calls. And I called the mission president, and I just told him, I said, I don't think I believe it anymore. And he said, Sister Hillary, I think you're depressed. And now I'm like, well, no shit, you know, of course I'm depressed. But I remember thinking, okay, I can do depressed. My mom's depressed. I get depression. I've dealt with that my whole life. It's in my family genes. That makes sense. I'm depressed. I get it. I'll be okay. I'm just depressed. He gave me permission to call my parents and talk with... He was a good guy. He was a good guy. And to, like, so I think I called him in the middle of the night and talked with my dad and my mom, and my dad is like a fixer, you know? So he was just like, I knew it was in our genes, and, you know, your mom has it and everything. And so, you know, we'll take care of this, you know, we'll get it all sorted out. He's a fixer. And I don't think I talked to my mom at that point, because I still didn't like my mom. But I was talking with my dad, and I was like, okay, you know, we'll take care of it. And I went to bed that night feeling, like, pretty relieved that I could talk to my parents and finally let them know. And the mission president said, like, I will, he's like, I'm going to come see you. I was in the farthest area away, like, north in the mission. And he said, it'll probably take me a couple days, but, I think he was going to come the next day. So I said, okay. And I remember, no, 2 days. The next day we tried to go out, me and my companion, and I had so much anxiety. I, like, read the scriptures that morning, and, like, I remember reading a part about going to hell, and I just, like, lost it. Oh my gosh, I'm going to hell. I don't believe this anymore. It was just, like, this weird thing. Like, how could I believe in going to hell, but I didn't believe anything? But I had read it that believers go to hell. Non-believers go to hell, so I must be going to hell. So I had just, like, insane amount of anxiety. We went home. I remember just crying and just, like, praying or trying. It was, like, weird, like, not having beliefs, but still praying. And I think I talked to the mission president, and the mission president told me, call my dad my parents as much as I wanted to. So I think I called them 4 times that day. And I know my parents' bills were, like, thousands of dollars because they took every call of mine, but just total anxiety and just confusion. And we went home that night, and then the next day the mission president was going to come, and I couldn't go out to teach. And so, you know what I mean? I was just, like, so, like, anxious and depressed and confused. So that morning I remember thinking, okay, if I can just get a priesthood blessing, I know it's all going to be restored. If I have faith in a priesthood blessing, that it's all going to come back. I just know it. I just have to have faith. You know, so I prayed all morning, and we were meeting the president at the church in the afternoon. So I met with him. We rode our bikes over there and sat down with him. And the president kind of spoke. His Chinese was way, way good. So he explained it finally to my companion, poor thing. You know, she, like, really had no clue what was going on. You know,
you're a basket.
I know, just, like, such a wreck. I feel so bad, but she was like, you know, I couldn't explain it. He explained it to her, and she, like, understood. And then he, like, turned to me and he said, you know, before we get started, is there anything I can do? I said, yeah, I would really, really, I said, if you could give me a priesthood blessing. And he, like, paused and he looked at me and he said, before we do the, you know, before we do that, let's just talk. And I remember that moment, I had no hope. Every bit of hope and every belief, it went blank. And I remember.
Why is that? Why at that point when he wanted to talk with you?
I think because I think it was like the last ounce of any bit of energy I could muster. And he said no. And in my mind. And he never gave me the blessing that day. And I just blanked out everything that he had said, and like nothing, just zero, just totally numb, just gone. So he left, and I don't even remember really what happened the rest of the day. I just remember like zero. I think he said, we'll just keep going. We'll send you some antidepressants in the mail. You know, so my parents helped facilitate that because my mom was diagnosed. So they sent me a package and I was able to like, so I was just going through the motions of being a missionary, but not teaching, nothing. I think my junior companion took over and I just kind of followed her. And then they sent me the antidepressants, and I remember starting to take those, and like I would fall asleep. That's like a side effect, you know? And I couldn't stay awake to save my life, like at all. And I remember calling up the mission president and just saying like, I can't do this anymore, but please don't send me home. Like I will be humiliated. I am known as like a giant back home. I cannot go home. And so in the middle of I think I'd been companions for about 3 weeks. He said, okay, like he did an emergency transfer and he said, you can be my companion and come in the mission office with me and we'll figure it out. And which a saint for doing that. And cause I just didn't want to go home, you know, like ashamed of like just being like such a, so he transferred me and I was with a companionship of sisters and they would just drop me off every day at the office, then pick me up at night. And I remember just being a zombie, like zero, like no emotions, like the antidepressants had kicked in. I would fall asleep all the time but I would feel nothing all the time, just like zero. And so the only thing I did was make birthday cards and clean the office. I love to clean. So, and I was like, oh my gosh, every single home I ever lived in the mission, I cleaned it all out because they would always have tons of missionary crap, like old clothes and stuff. I was like known to like clean every single apartment. It was funny, but anyway, not to detract, but I just made birthday cards and I was his companion. And then when he'd have to leave on business, I became companions with the older couple in the mission that were in the office too. And they try and like talk to me. I remember the sister did. She was adorable. She would like try and like help me figure it out, you know, or like encourage me just to like pray and stuff. But my mission president actually wouldn't let me pray or read the scriptures or anything because it just gave me so much anxiety. I would just like melt down. So I wasn't allowed to like do anything except for make birthday cards and clean. So I'd go to her house sometimes and she taught me how to make soup, which I was grateful for. I love it to this day. But I was just like a zombie. I had 3 months left of my mission. And the mission president said, you know, we're going to send you home early, but only a move early. So it would only be 6 weeks. So I was with him for about 6 weeks. And he said, we can just use the excuse for school because the next semester was starting. And so I was like, that's perfect. That would be great. I'd like that to be able to, I wanted to go home. But not early. And that was like my, like an okay way to go home a little early was using school as an excuse.
I like that, President Watson.
Yeah. He is awesome. Yeah, he totally got us.
Right. So when you come home, I would think that your parents are going to try to get you psychological help.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Can I add one thing too?
Sure.
during the last little bit of my mission, I was still able to call home as much as I wanted. And I finally was able to talk to my mom and have an awesome, she was able to level with me because she understood the depression and stuff. So I finally and I'm so grateful I went through all this because I have a relationship with my mom today. Because I went through such shit and horrible things, and I really feel like that was the whole plan, maybe because I was a little crazy too, and unbalanced, that I had to go through this, take away everything in order to, become normal and then have the relationship with my mom. So, anyway, yes, I came home. And they didn't come pick me up because I was such, a mess, and I went home a move early, but yeah, I went home. And I did start, I think I went and saw a therapist once, and I was still taking antidepressants, but I hated them. So I remember just stopping taking them. I'm like, I'm not taking these. They're not giving me back my testimony, and that's what I want. So I just said, forget it. So, ironically, I came home from my mission, and then the next morning, I got a phone call. I think I was released that night. The night before, I got a phone call, and bright and early, and it was from Jason. He called me the day I got home from my mission. And at that point, I still thought I was going to marry him. I was so ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that Jason's calling you.
I agree. I wish he would have left me alone. I was, because at that point, I still totally believed that I was going to marry him still.
But he was a married man at this point.
Right. I was concerned. I was definitely convinced he was going to get a divorce at some point. Cause I still had that feeling from when I was prior to the mission. Just weird. Super weird. I don't think I told him anything because I didn't want to give a negative impression of who I was. I just pretended my mission was great and everything. But inside I was just a mess, total basket case. And the next day or two, I wrote a letter to Ben, my friend that was in Snow College, and he had just gone on his mission. He went late. And I remember writing him and pouring out my heart and saying I don't believe any of this. And I was just so distraught, and I didn't really have anyone to talk to, but I was word vomit. I would just tell anyone that would listen because I wanted to get my testimony back, but I didn't really have, I think I went to a couple of sessions of therapy, but I refused because it wasn't getting my testimony back. So I just remember I would just started running. I was just I guess I'll just run. So I just run. Not figuratively, literally. I would just run all the time. Because I was
running to Jamaica or somewhere. Yeah. You're running around the track.
Yeah, I was just that was the only thing I could do with my thoughts because they were just so confused. And I met with we have an appointment with the bishop. Come home. And a homecoming, which I was terrified of too. Because when I left on my farewell, there was 300 extra people, it was just and I give them this amazing farewell. And then I was coming home and I couldn't even say anything because I didn't believe any of it. And it was just this weird, shit, what am I going to do at my homecoming? I have no idea what I'm going to even say. But I met with the, bishop. And he was an idiot. He was a complete idiot. I went and sat in his office, and I remember him saying, Sister Hillary, how was your mission? And I said, I don't even believe in God anymore.
Wow. You were shy.
I wasn't at all. Yeah.
Wow. And how did Bishop Idiot respond?
Bishop Idiot said, well, he didn't even hear me, but he said, now that you're a returned missionary, there's lots of rules you have to abide now. You can't cut your hair or dye it.
What?
Yeah, it was weird. He was an idiot, seriously. Cut your hair or dye it. Only go on group dates. And rattled off ridiculous. I don't think he was bishop for very long, but rattled off ridiculous, stupid things that he came up with that was rules of a returned missionary. He didn't even address or talk to me about the fact that I didn't even believe in God.
Wow.
Yeah.
He really was Bishop Idiot.
Yeah.
So you're saying, I don't believe in God. I'm desperate to get my beliefs back. And he tells you not to cut or dye your hair.
Yeah. And not to go on any one-on-one dates, all group dates.
Did you say that's okay because my boyfriend's married?
Oh, man. I should have. That's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I've never heard of that happening. So that definitely, well, definitely I can't say, but that sounds like it was just his own.
Yeah. His own personal whatever, you know? Wow. You know how there's people sometimes, I see like there's the gospel and then there's like the culture of the gospel. And I felt like he was on that culture train, like full speed, Shinkansen, bullet train. Uh-huh. Just like doing his own thing. So
he wanted to be state president.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So I went, from that meeting and I think I had my homecoming the next week and I remember tons of people being there and they all excited and I just put on a front. I think I knew what to say, but I wasn't going to say it in front of the whole pulpit. And then again, just running. That's all I could do was run. So.
I'm trying to think of how to ask this. Do you feel that you really had depression or was it just a result of your mission and your lack of belief?
Yes. I was super depressed.
So I think it was a depression.
But I think it was because of the lack of beliefs.
Okay. That's what it kind of sounds to me like, because you didn't want to get therapy. You just wanted your beliefs back.
Exactly. And those little pills weren't doing anything to get it back.
But it definitely was a survival tool for you for the last little bit. I can see why you would be taking them.
Yeah, exactly. It was totally numbing, so it was good. But then shortly after I came home, I stopped taking them. I refused. I just wouldn't, because they weren't giving me the results I wanted.
All right. So you got back. Farewell. Mm-hmm. You're running. Did you go back to school? I know you said you're coming early, so you went back to snow.
Actually, I had graduated from Snow, and I had applied back prior to going to BYU.
Did that seem like a mistake?
Yes. At this point? Oh, completely. But they had deferred my enrollment because of the mission. Mm. And at that point, I still wanted my beliefs back. So I was totally, like, I did not want to leave the church, but my mind would not let me believe it at all. So I was willing to do anything to get him back. And, so I went to BYU and, my best guy friends were back from their missions. We had
did you know any girls?
I've always kind of hung out with the dudes, kind of a little bit of a tomboy.
That's all right.
But I have a lot of good girlfriends too. I get along pretty easily, but my two best guy friends were back. And so I moved into the apartment complex that they were in and I was so happy to be with, cause they totally loved me. And would listen to me and talk with me all the time. Adam and Drew were so good to me. And so I went into this new ward and just felt totally started to get the hatred. I don't know if you have a lot of people kind of start to have that step, but after the depression was kind of like a anger, hatred.
Yeah. Mormon Expression has never had any angry people. No, I think that's just part of the healing process. You do get angry. Did you feel betrayed?
I did. I felt so betrayed. I was still trying to get it back, so I would push it away, the anger. Because I was I still want to believe everything. But I remember starting to kind of feel a little anger, a little rebellion. It was just kind of starting to form, barely. But I did have some kind of feeling I had signs. I had a home teacher that was amazing. And I was terrified to have him preach anything to me, but he didn't at all. He was super cool, He was super rad. And, he would make me CDs and took me on a road trip to see his girlfriend and just cool guy, just awesome. And it was exactly what I needed. And I felt that was kind of a sign from God to okay, you know, he's helping. And I would go to church with Adam and Drew and we'd laugh. Drew and I, we always would make jokes all the time. And that was the way I could get through church, just laughing and kind of teasing. And then Adam was always he's like this big old giant of a guy. He's like over 6 feet tall, and he'd always give me hugs. We'd always talk about deep things, and he'd just listen to me, and we'd talk all the time. And when I'd come home, I think I said my friend Bryce, he came home early from his mission. And right when I was leaving to go on mine, he had called me. He'd come home early. And I remember, so not to skip back, but a little bit, but I remember right before I went on my mission, I was trying to live all the missionary rules too. So I'd go to bed at 10:30. I think he called at like 10:25. I remember like him calling and being like, "Hey, Hillary." And I'd be like, "I've got like 4 minutes before I have to be in bed," you know, like.
You know, like, you were so uptight at this point. I'm not surprised that you broke at some point.
I know, right? Seriously. I was completely unbalanced. It was good that I felt like God totally like broke me over his knee for sure. But, so Bryce called me and, he like told me a little bit about his mission. So he came home right when I was leaving. Went over to France to see little Nejma, my French exchange student, lost his virginity to her, and then went off gallivanting, made some girlfriends and boyfriends along the way, and just kind of had like an interesting path.
So he was really happy after his mission.
Yes. Yes, he was. And so we had reconnected, and I remember this one time he was like, wanted to introduce me to some friends that were non-judgmental. I told him about my experience and I wasn't believing anything, and he was really excited to like introduce me to like the other side of the world, but I didn't know it at the time. You know what I mean? I was still like,
he was being sneaky at the time. Yes,
very sneaky, very deceiving little critter.
Get this girl to France.
Yep. So we went to like see a show up here, like Urban Lounge, and see a band, and there was a bar inside. And I'd never drink any alcohol, or I don't even think sworn at that point in my life, you know. I was like super good, and I was still really good. But we went to Urban Lounge, and he, you know, sat down at the bar, and he's like, "Have a drink." And I was like, no. Yeah, right. Like, there's no way I'm going to drink. And he's like, "Okay." So he like grabbed a shot, drank it, and then took mine, drank it, and then grabbed me, kissed me, and spit it in my mouth.
Whoa.
Yeah. Such a punk.
Gross.
Disgusting, regurgitated Jaeger. Disgusting.
Did he have a motive for this?
He's one of those types that wanted to help people out of the church.
Wow.
So
he's gonna.
He had an agenda for sure. But I remember at that point I was like, well, I've already tasted it, so I might as well, you know, try some others. So
you mean it worked?
Yeah, it totally worked.
Miss, I can't be 4 minutes late.
So. Yeah.
Okay, now that you spit it in my
mouth. But the 4 minutes late was before my mission.
Right.
At that point, I was a little
more relaxed.
I was, the anger had started to build, right?
Okay. Okay. So this was rebellion.
Yes. Okay. Maybe a little rebellion, but wasn't ready for it yet.
Okay.
But I was like, okay. So I drank a bunch that night, went home, woke up the next morning, super hungover, still went to BYU class, you know? No. And I remember feeling really guilty, super guilty about it. I didn't tell Adam and Drew, and I don't think I hung out with him very much after that, because I was still meeting with the bishop there and stake presidents and talking to them, telling them about my experience, trying to like get someone to like cure me, get my testimony back. So I was still like talking with tons of priesthood leaders. And nothing worked. Nothing worked. I mean, even my adorable little Drew, I call him Drucifer. My little Drucifer, and Adam, I call him a damn boy. my Drew, he took me up to free counseling. He would like walk me up there because BYU had like free counseling, and he'd like wait for me to like do counseling, and I would try and talk with them too. But like no one could explain to me why I lost my testimony or why it was taken from me. So they were just patient and just kind and awesome.
And nobody ever said to you it's because Satan wants to get the most righteous. He's,
I'm sure,
the deceiver.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure. And people would always ask me questions like, now I know that, like, even my dad, he would be like, so like, what did you do? You know what I mean? It was always like, they always thought I had read anti-Mormon literature, and I never picked up on their cues ever. Mm. And I never had. It was just my own thoughts. My mind wouldn't let me go there.
So it isn't even anything you studied or anything. It was just your own feeling, your own deep thoughts.
Yep.
Okay.
Back to real quick, just the morning when I came home, Jason called me. He also had somehow convinced me to be a Boy Scout leader that day. He's like, you should be a Boy Scout leader.
That is not what you do to depress people.
Oh my gosh. Yes, this is true. I think it was because too, I'd worked in Alaska or whatever. Somehow like the conversation, he's like, be a Boy Scout leader. And I remember applying. So like drinking, okay, it was after drinking and I got accepted in like the following spring. I was going to go up to Washington to be like a Boy Scout training program leader. So I went with people from Utah and we went up to Washington. This is significant. So I went to, Washington. Well, I met up with all these three other people that were going to Boy Scout training camp. One of them was Angie. She was like a recent convert. One was Bryce. Another Bryce. I call him B. Rice because I always have nicknames for people. And I already had a Bryce, so he was B. Rice. And then Brayden, I called him my Buddha boy because he was Buddhist. So B. Rice was a return missionary. Angie was a recent convert. And then Brayden was a Buddhist. We drove up together. And I remember sitting in the car, and this guy, this B. Rice, was obnoxious, just over the, like, talking in Tagalog because he went on his mission to the Philippines and, like, just saying stories about him defecating on the side of the road and getting caught by the police. And he was just, like, obnoxious. And I remember we were just, like, all annoyed that he was in the car with us. Just like, ugh. And at a stop somewhere along the way, I remember jumping in the front seat and being like, you sit in the back and take a nap. I'm going to sit up here with Brayden. So we sat in the front. We were talking about, like, business and geography. That's what I was studying at the time, so drove on the way, and I remember on the car ride, and at that point, I had nothing, no beliefs still, like zero, and I remember not even having a reason to want to live. Like, I was just...
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't mean
that,
but you didn't believe in Joseph Smith anymore. What about God?
Nope, no, God either. Okay. Zero. At that point, like, from going back to BYU, talking with everyone, therapists, you know, trying to get some belief, but zero.
Okay.
Nothing. And I was still pretty depressed. I mean, I would cry almost daily at school. Like, all the time, just sobbing, just couldn't get it together. And we were sitting in the car on the way up, and Brayden, we started talking, and of course I, like, word vomited everyone, because I just was like, someone please figure this out for me. I can't figure it out, you know. I think I started to tell Brayden a little bit, and he's like, well, have you ever heard about karma? And I was like, karma? No. What's karma? And then he told me what karma was, and I remember thinking, really excited, be like, I can do karma. I can do karma. I want to live. I can live for karma. I get it. Karma is okay with me. And I'm like, so.
And that's basically putting good out in the world so you get good back, right?
Yeah. Okay. Whatever actions you do, it's kind of like the golden rule too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do under those as you'd have them do to you, or yeah. So I remember just being like, so excited, like first time since I came home from my mission. So it almost been like not quite a year, but that I finally had one reason to live was karma. And, so we continued on our trip up to Boy Scout camp, and, B. Rice was super annoying the whole trip and was trying to get me to give him a back massage. Ironically, in the back of my mind, I was hoping that he could be someone that would help me get back to the church too. Like, it was super messed up. Like, I still wanted to get back to the church. So anyone that was like a return missionary or priesthood leader, I still like had this hope that they could bring me back or
so
figure it out.
So you massaged him?
I didn't. I didn't. He was super annoying the whole week, and I would just roll my eyes, and Brayden was like my sidekick, and Angie, we were in the same little group. And the last night we had celebration, and the nature group, I was in the nature group, we all went to a bar to go celebrate. And I remember being terrified at that point. Totally terrified because I'd only been, okay, so the Bryce story was a little bit ahead of, I hadn't drank at that point.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway.
The drinking comes later.
Yes.
As far as your scout camp, you hadn't done it yet.
I hadn't. So, scout camp, we went to a bar, and I remember panicking because I'd never been to a bar, never set foot in a bar before, and I was super scared. So I went up to Brayden, and I was like, can you please come with me? Like, I'm super scared. I don't know what to do. He's like, sorry, got my own thing tonight, can't. So then I went up to B. Rice, and I was like, B. Rice, you know, will you come with me? And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll come with you. And he's like, just be a designated driver. And I was like, what is that? You know, like super naive.
Wow, you really didn't know anything.
Nothing. Huh? Nothing but the church. I was completely zero. And he was like, just you drive and tell him you can't drink. And I was like, okay. You know, so like we get to the bar and he orders me like a Shirley Temple and I'm, you know, just relieved. We go home. We help all the drunk people home. Angie, the recent convert, she was like puking and trying to hook up with some guy. And it was just so funny. And I remember like being really grateful for him that night. And then at the night I was like, well, I guess I'll give you a massage.
You gave
right.
in.
I totally gave in. So I went into his tent and he shared a tent with Brayden, and I think we ended up like making out or something, and Brayden was like disappointed in me. He was so sad. He was just like,
we walk in on you giving him a massage.
I think at that point we'd like hid under the blankets or something. I don't know. So ridiculous. And he was such a jerk, B. Rice, too. He was such a jerk. And the next day he didn't like talk to me. But Brayden was like totally had my back, you know. He was like, Hillary, you're so cool. Like, forget him. He's like such a loser, you know. Like, who cares? Like, he was just like a really good guy. So like we drove home and from our trip, and Brayden and I, B. Rice and Angie, all still remain friends. And I still actually talk to Angie and Brayden. B. Rice kind of faded.
B. Rice found another girl to give him a massage.
Yes.
So scout camp didn't make you believe either.
Nope.
Can't imagine why.
So I didn't go back to BYU yet. Summertime, I went to become the Boy Scout leader for the whole summer. And ironically, one of my mission companions came with me. The one that was like Nicole. The one that loved me, was happy-go-lucky. I was convinced her to come to Boy Scout camp with me. So we were at Boy Scout camp together and just had a blast, like so much fun. Like just, and I had taken a trip up to see, I still was kind of like crushing on B. Rice, which is ridiculous. But like I still hoped that some priesthood member would bring me back. And so I was hopeful for anyone. Even like a scumbag like B. Rice. Like it was just ridiculous. And so I remember I took a trip. I picked up B. Rice. He was a total jerk to me the whole way. Went and saw Brayden in Jackson Hole. That's where he was a Boy Scout leader. We were all different camps, you know. And then we continued to be friends, Brayden and I. And he had a girlfriend at the time. And I challenged Brayden with some mountaineering knowledge, like elevations. He was a big outdoorsy guy. So Brayden broke up his girlfriend and he came down to visit me. We were just friends. Like we talk about everything. And I'd go visit him. He went to Utah State and we just have like long talks all the time about life. And he told me about Buddhism. And I remember feeling so grateful for him and like completely loved him because he gave me the reason to live again. He told me about karma, and then so I totally like loved him as a person completely. And that love developed into lust maybe at some point. One night when I was up there, ended up making out, you know, and then just, I don't know, just being smitten. No, I'd already was totally in love with him. So then hooking up with him or kissing, making out, like, you know, amplified it. I guess people could probably relate to that. I don't know.
Sure.
So, and the aspect of Brayden is interesting dynamic has been in my life. And the story of us has been really interesting and crazy. I think I spent the night that night, you know, made out. So anyway, we started this intimate relationship while he was trying to help me also process my experience. I had another guy friend that I met at BYU, Daniel, and he was like awesome, completely non-judgmental. I could tell him everything. And I remember really having a lot of hatred at that moment, like a hatred for my garments, because like I was hooking up with Brayden, but I didn't like have hook up with him at that point, just making out. But I was like, I remember taking him off when I would go to see him. And then like a few weeks later, cutting them all up, but making sure to cut out all of the, whatever they're called, markings or whatever.
Yeah.
And dispose of them properly, but just being like frustrated and mad and angry at that point. So angry to the point, like I was hanging out with Daniel one night. I went to his house and I remember screaming at the top of my lungs how much I hated God, like hated God. And I think at that point I had started to believe the karma kind of let me have a God back sort of thing, ironically. But just so angry, telling him to fuck off, like every expletive I could think of, just super angry. And I had just finished meeting with like a stake president or bishop and left drained, left that night, walked home and just said, fuck it all. I gotta take a break. I'm sick of crying. I'm sick of trying to figure this out. I'm done. And I gotta take a break. I'm done. Walk away from it. And that was kind of where I think I had to hit that point in order to rebuild. So yeah.
All right. So taking a break, did that mean stop attending church?
Yep. That was everything. No more scriptures. I think I had tried to read the scriptures at that point. Yeah, praying and reading, talking, whatever the stake president bishops had said. At that point, I was just like, fuck it, I'm done. You know, I'm just done. I'm more interested in this Brayden boy and this hooking up stuff. And I'm sick of dealing with like my emotions and crying every day. I'm just done. And then I took a extreme interest in him and hid it from everybody. No one knew about Brayden. Just that. When I would go up to Utah State, they thought I was going to visit my old roommate, Kayo, up there, you know, so.
Is it because he was a Buddhist that you were hiding it?
Yeah. Completely.
Did he know that?
Yes. He knew that I was struggling with it. And he was kind of like the only person, and him and Daniel were I felt like the only people I could be completely myself, my thoughts and everything, and just let it all out there. And not feel judged, I guess. Like if I told my story, there was something they had to add to it. They would just like, were empathetic instead of trying to like fix me. So I don't know, probably similar to other people, I guess. I don't know. I tried. I'd given a good go.
Yeah. I would say you did. Your relationship continues with Brayden.
Right.
Do you become serious with him?
Yes, I did. I'd go up to see him all the time. I wouldn't tell any of my roommates. I was like a camper, outdoorsy. So I'd just take my tent and go, and, you know, we'd go camping and he would teach me. I mean, I was so naive. I remember asking him about lingerie. When do girls wear lingerie? I don't get it. You know, it's right before, you know, you have sex and then that's it. Right. And he was just like, Hillary, no, girls wear lingerie for themselves because they think it's sexy. And I was just like, what? No, it's for the guys. It's not for the girls. It's for the guys. And I just had like all these weird hangups that he would explain to me about everything. Like I was so naive. I didn't get it, anything. And he just kind of explained to me about alcohol and intimacy and all that. And I just was like super clueless. So, our relationship continued. I think I graduated from BYU. And he had gotten a job in California. And I was completely in love with him at that point. I was forgotten about Jason, was going to marry him instead. So, which is good, finally, to get rid of him. But I graduated from BYU. I know, like, during my time at BYU, I became really rebellious after that. I, like, pierced my nose. I didn't care. You know, I started, like, hooking up with Brayden. I lost my virginity at some point. You know, it was just kind of like, I was done. And I wanted to get a job in California. So I went to a career fair and I got a job with Travelers Insurance, like worked super hard at my interviews and convinced them that they needed me, and I got a job offer. So I went up to California, Northern, and Braden was in LA, so close enough, right? I was excited. Worked for Travelers, continued to talk with him, can see him, and then they relocated me to Orange County. So we were like right there. He'd come and see me, but at this point it was more like a booty call and I didn't really recognize it. I was just like in love with him. He had like saved my life. And I remember at one point he just was like, I never want to talk to you or see you again. Oh. Some fight we got in, because I think I felt like a booty call, and I told him, he said no. So he went away. And then I just started to like date. Met a guy from MySpace back then. He found me on MySpace. Justin. And that was fun. I liked him, but after 9 months, like, I was like, he hasn't put a ring on my finger. That was our culture to like get married really fast. So I broke up with him on like Valentine's Day. I just had like zero concept of relationships. I was just totally broken. Silly. So broke up with him. And then I went and, my sister moved out from Utah to California with me, and we moved back down to San Diego where I grew up. And my dad had offered me I was kind of done with Travelers. It was kind of over it. It was like a robot. So I went down to San Diego and worked for my dad's construction company.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. We didn't have a job position, but I went in, and I'm a really hard worker, so I made a position for myself, and there was like 6 people in the office. And when I left, there was only me and like the vice president. So
you just got rid of everyone.
Huh? I did. Yeah. I worked really hard, and I dated a bunch, down there, just like internet crap, you know, just like garbage stuff, just like whatever was out there, whatever random, you know, the popular modes of dating these days. So
would you have dated a Mormon back then?
No, I had tons of anger. And I think in that point, it was super angry. Like from BYU rebellion, it continued to grow, and I hated the church, like hated it. And I didn't really think about it much because I wasn't going to church, but I hated the church. Like I felt like they lied to me and were deceitful. And I wanted to sue the church actually for all the money I'd paid from tithing.
What made you think they were lying to you? Is it just still personal belief and thoughts, or had you started to look into it?
I hadn't looked into it too much, but I had kind of, I forget what concepts really bothered me, but I feel like I think the priesthood bothered me a ton because of, I felt like the abuse that I had taken from leaders, certain ones, like my bishop when I came home and my mission president, one of them, you know, the first one, that bothered me. I didn't feel like I was equal as a woman. And that just sort of things kind of developed. I thought the church's stance on chastity was total bullshit, because why would I ever marry someone that I didn't know? They were like, you know, in bed and drinking. I didn't have a problem with it. I wasn't like I rarely drink anyway, but I was just like, it's not that big of a deal. I didn't have an issue with it. There's just like things like that I was just like, bullshit, 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 lies. I don't care. Word of wisdom. Oh, right. Like everybody, like in the church, it's like ridiculous. Like sweets and candies and treats instead of like taking care of yourself or exercising or whatever. Just like things like that I was just built up. And then my mission on top of it, like I never could figure it out. So obviously they lied to me about even going. I mean, they took everything from me, basically, is how I took it. And I was going to visit my friend Nejma last summer in France, the little exchange student. And finally, I'd never been to France. So I pulled up a bunch of emails. One of them was, there was an email came up between me and Braden about France. And I had been like a couple years at that point. And I remember thinking, oh, I'll just send him an email. Maybe it's like kind of, you know, dissipated. I'm in a different spot. So I sent him an email and he responded. Hey, how are you? Just the basics. And we kind of started to be a little bit of friends again. And I was really excited. And he was dating some girl at the time. And of course, like being your first love or whoever you lose your virginity to, whatever oxytocin did to my brain, you know, there was a little bit of attachment there still. And I went on to visit my friend Nejma in France and then came home, continued to be friends. And we continued talking. And this one night I had this weird dream about me and Brayden. And we were just driving in a car, and he was wearing a white shirt, and it was raining outside. And I remember hugging him and then getting, like, the most intense feeling, waking up with, like, the most intense, peaceful feeling I've ever felt in my entire life. Like, it was, like, just comfort. So I was like, okay, this is whatever, cool, weird, whatever. At lunch, I texted Brayden, and I said, hey, I had a dream about you. And he's like, oh, yeah, like, what? And I told him. Dreamed about you. You were wearing a white shirt, raining. I woke up feeling peaceful. And he said, Hillary, that's not like, you're not the first person to have a dream about me in white this week. I was like, oh, really? Okay. I was like, are you going to die or something? Like, what's going on? And then he said, I'm getting baptized. And yeah. And I was really fucking mad. I was so angry, and I was like, what girl has tricked you into getting baptized? What? I was like mad at God. I believed in, why are you having me dream about this guy in white and raining and he's getting baptized? Like, this is fucked up. Like, I'm the one that went on a mission. Now he's getting baptized and he's getting Mormon. He helped me leave the church. Like, what the fuck is going on? I was sorry. For all the F's, but
oh,
bombs.
You're just, you know, you and John.
Oh, sorry. Hi, John. but I was so mad. I was so mad. I was like so mad to the point I couldn't even stay at work. And I remember texting him like, you better call me. And I remember leaving work and then picking up the phone and crying and sobbing and anger. Ugh, couldn't call anyone because only God could tell me the answers. And I remember hanging up the phone, like not calling anyone, just being so mad. And so finally I'm driving home. Brayden calls me. I'm like, what is going on? He's like, I can't tell you right now. You're just so upset. Just like, go home. We'll talk later. I was like, okay, fine. Drive home, park my car. Go walk inside. I'm sitting, staring out the window, just so angry. And I'm thinking, God, you better tell me what is going on. I remember I was so mad. And as I'm sitting there, two missionaries rode up on their bikes on my doorstep.
It's like a bad comedy.
So fucking weird, yeah. I'm sorry for all the expletives, but seriously. And I remember thinking, what the hell? I like go to my door, open it. I'm like, can I help you? And I was like, yeah, we're looking for Hillary. I was like, what? What? Whoa. You've got to be kidding me. I've lived here. I lived there for like a year plus, never seen the missionaries once. And today of all days, they show up on my doorstep, you know?
Well, it's a sign, Hillary.
Yeah. And I took it as that.
Oh no.
Completely. 1,000%. Totally.
Wow.
Yeah. Completely.
What were they doing there? Did they just hunt
They're coming
down?
To find me. Yeah. I don't know. They didn't really say. I remember just saying, like, explaining to them what had happened, and they were just like, I don't know. And I remember thinking that night, texted Brayden, he's like, it's a sign from God, listen to him. And I was like, okay. That night, I remember not sleeping at all, just freaking couldn't, like, I was shaking from like, okay, these are too many coincidences to be a coincidence, like, God's fucking telling me something. And I would talk to God like that all the time. That's like how my relationship was. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go back to church. Totally am. I remember that night I booked my plane ticket to go to Brayden's baptism. Somehow I figured that out, the date. I'm going to go back to church. I called Adam, a damn boy, and Drew. I think I just called Adam. And I remember telling him, I'm going to go back to church. There's a sign. I'm going to go back. And I called my friend Dave, another guy friend. Jeez. He had And he was with me at BYU. He was living in San Diego, and I was like, I'm going to go to church with you Sunday. And he like laughed at me. He's just like, what? Okay. All right. You can come to church with me. And that following Sunday, I went to church with Dave, and I was like, I'm going to go back. You know, it's a sign. after like sacrament meeting, like they came up to me and they were like, hi, can I have your number and everything and blah, blah, blah. I want your information. And I panicked, like freaked out. I was just like, whoa, whoa. Like I can't handle this too much, you know? I like had total anxiety attack. I remember sitting in church and like every single doubt that I thought was still there amplified. I was angry. I was confused at this whole thing. And I remember I was like, leave. Like I just got to go. So I left. And I was just like, I have to go back, but I'll figure this out. And during this time, I'm talking to Brayden. I flew out to his baptism. Like my sister came with and she had like a really cool experience at the baptism. And it was like a confirmation for Brayden and his baptism. And like, I just was like so confused, but I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm talking with Brayden the whole time, but he's like, he was a new member. And I was like, and this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and I can't deal with any of this stuff. And he was just like, I don't know, Hillary, but here's a book on Buddhism that really helps me a lot. Take this, you know, here my newly converted Buddhist boy that gets now Mormon is giving me a book on Buddhism. I take it and read it. It's like meditations, like prayers and chants. And I enter them in my phone. I memorize them. I think about, and I don't know what happened, but I was able to let go of all the anger that I had towards the church. I was like still going, and I had met like two girls at church that were super rad, April and Cynthia, and they were awesome. We like would go to Tijuana and do like orphanage trips, and they weren't judgmental and helped me. And, but this meditation somehow, like I was able to let go of this anger, and Brayden broke up with the chick that totally converted him. And
girl.
Totally. And we showed interest in getting back together, and I was like, awesome. He's the one that's going to help me back to the church, because why not? I mean, there's all these signs like from God, you know? So we started like dating long distance. He was in Utah and I was still in San Diego, and came out to like Lake Powell with family, and we'd almost hooked up again, but we didn't because
you're Mormon. Both Mormon now.
Yeah, totally. And just like completely in love with him. And I just took it as like a sign, like we're going to marry each other. And I was like still a lunatic with relationships and seriously, like no clue. Came back from the trip. And I think shortly after he broke up with me, and he ended up dating a girl he married, and he actually got married in the temple, married her in the temple. But I let go of all my anger. So I was in a way better place. So I took that as like a sign from God, like the God I believed in, that he was helping me heal, letting go of the anger towards the church. Cause the anger just hurts you. So.
Brayden lives happily ever after. You're in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
What comes next?
Continue to date like total lame guys through the internet. And then I went down to Mexico with one of my roommates because we were really close to Tijuana, and we went down there for like a volleyball tournament. And, I met this guy, Ron, who was super cute, like the cutest guy I'd ever dated or seen or whatever. And, he totally showed an interest in me, probably because that night, like as we were all drinking, he was trying to dance with me. He was trying to dance with me, and I remember picking him up and like throwing him over my shoulder, and all of his friends laughing at him because I totally just kicked his butt. And I don't know, it was just like super hilarious. And we ended up like dating and really still clueless about relationships. And I didn't realize it, but like he'd always fall asleep all the time from drinking. I didn't realize that he was like an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. But when I finally realized it, he crashed his car and got a DUI. Didn't kill anyone or himself or hurt, you know, but I remember like thinking, well, I'll give him, like, he was like, I'm not going to drink anymore. So I was like, okay, I'll give him a chance. So we went to AA meetings, and I loved AA. It was just like church without church. I love testimony meeting. I always liked it still. I liked hearing people's stories. I loved it.
You enjoy AA meetings.
And I remember he thought it was like such a waste of time, total joke, but I remember one of the principles of AA was making, reconciling for any damages you've done wrong to like make them right. And I remember having like a super intense spiritual moment when I was in AA. I shared the time when I was at Snow College where I tried to like make every wrong right in my life and how good I had felt. We left the meeting and I said, like, he's like, whoa, what got into you sort of comment? And I said, it just reminded me of like my past. I said, I really liked it. And he goes, well, you're not going to like go join the church, are you? And I remember thinking like, fuck you. Maybe I will, you know, who knows? I don't know.
Had a really good relationship.
I didn't say fuck you there. Yeah. But I remember thinking in my head, cause I've never, yeah. And I've just been like, and I was going on a trip to, I climbed mountains. Like I had climbed, Kilimanjaro, and then I had planned another trip. I went to Everest base camp and did like a near Ryan Peak, and I'd done a bunch of mountains, and I planned a trip to down to South America to Aconcagua. I was excited, gotten a big, like the night before, one of my sisters really suffering with depression and mania, kind of similar diagnosis as my mom, and just like saying she was going to kill herself. And I remember thinking like, should I go on this trip? You know, like it was just crazy. And I didn't sleep that whole night. And I remember like kind of fighting with Ron, and I was like, forget it. I'm just going to go tell her I love her and I'm going. So I went off. I left like kind of on a bad note with Ron, and but I left and went to South America. A few days prior to that, I had a friend contact me that I hadn't talked to in like 10 years. His name's Wade. And when I was at BYU, I hadn't talked to him in years. And he said, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm going to Argentina. He's like, what? I was on my mission in Mendoza, and I lived in Argentina, and I married the girl from there, and I lived there. And I was just like, what? That's so crazy. Like, I'm going, you know, in 3 days. And so I was all excited. Anyway, I go to Argentina, climb this mountain, didn't make it to the top, got altitude sickness really bad. It takes a couple weeks to do it. And, they're pretty awesome trips, but pretty tough. So I come back early when my team summits and goes down another route. I went down the same route. And in my time, like leaving and going, I decided I'm not going back to the United States. I don't want to go back to Ron. I don't want to go back to like my life. I always had this feeling like I need to like get out into the world and not be in the United States. Kind of like the into the wild sort of mentality. If you ever seen that film. Yeah.
So this time you were really running.
Yeah. Completely running. So I got back, canceled my plane ticket. I didn't even call Ron. I just sent him an email and was like, I'm not coming home, and canceled my plane ticket, went and found a job while my teammates were finishing the climb. So I found a job teaching English.
You are not afraid.
No, I'm not. So my teammates came home. They were all stoked that I was not going home. They're like, cool, go for it and take this job. And it was winter time. It was over Christmas. I went and hiked Aconcagua. I always found excuses to leave during the holidays. I didn't have to like celebrate Christmas or whatever. It was just, I didn't believe in Christ. So I didn't care about Christmas. And, so I stayed in Argentina, and I'd went to go, I planned a trip to go to, Patagonia to see another fellow climber. But right before I left, it was like New Year's the next day. Our teammates, we'd gone out drinking and dancing and had a way good fun time. And then, the next morning afternoon, we were sitting around at, I was telling them that I was staying. I was really excited. And then walks by three elders in their just regular clothes, but they had their tags on. And I was like, hey elders, what's up? You know, just cause I was always friendly, and I was always friendly to missionaries cause it was such a hard time for me. So they came and talked to me, and what are you guys doing? You know, we climbed mountain Aconcagua, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm staying. They're like, oh, cool. We'll help you find an apartment because we're in charge of all the housing for all the missionaries. Like, we'll totally help you out. And I was like, really cool. You know, it was like a sign from God for me. I was supposed to be there. Cause it was like, God always had this way of connecting with me through experiences that I could relate to. And I definitely like felt like that. And through the church was one way he knew how to talk to me, even though I wasn't like Mormon. So I felt like really good. So I went down to Patagonia. My teammates went home. I came back. I told Wade, my friend, hey, guess what? I'm staying in Argentina, the place that you love. And he was like, oh, I'm so excited. Go say hi to like my family and talk to the mission president. He's awesome. Like just super excited. And I just knew I was supposed to be there. It felt right. And it was summer down there. It was just like awesome. And, so I fly back from Patagonia and I land and all the banks ran out of money. It happens a lot. They just wait a couple hours or a day and money comes back in. And so I'm walking around and I run into two sisters. It was the preparation day. So it was a Monday and, we'll buy you some lunch and come to the internet cafe. I was like, I need to email, you know, my boyfriend because he was really upset with me at the time and I was still trying to work that out because I wasn't coming home. And so I was like, yeah, we'll go to the internet cafe with you. And so we're sitting and I'm writing a letter to my boyfriend and I had been talking to Wade and he said, please say hi to all these people. I was like, yeah, sure. I'll talk to the mission president. I'll talk to members. I don't care. Like I didn't care. Like I was really open about my experience and whatever. So sitting there emailing in walks in the mission president and his wife. And the missionaries were like, oh my gosh, there's the mission president. Like duck. They were just like kind of teasing, you know. I was like, oh cool. I'm supposed to talk to him. So I finish up, close up my computer and I walk over and I'm like, I'm Hillary and I'm supposed to say hi to you from one of my friends. And they were like, oh, and they're like staring at me and they're like, well, why, what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, well, I climbed the mountain, you know, kind of gave them the story, came back. I'm supposed to be here and I'm staying. And they're like, oh, you can't do that. This place is super dangerous. Our missionaries get robbed all the time. And I said, no, I feel really good about it. Like I even ran into your elders and they'd help me find an apartment. And I really feel like God wants me here. And the wife goes, you can't do that. And I was like, what? They're like, take away precious missionary time so that they can help you find an apartment. And they're like, do you know how guilty they're going to feel? And I said, oh, I'm totally sorry. Like I can find a fucking apartment on my own. I didn't say that, but I was just like, you bitch, you know, like
they're going to feel guilty after she tells them to feel guilty.
Yeah. And I was just like, that is so, I don't know why I just swore. Anyway, I just remember feeling like, and then she goes, well, are you a member? And she's like, well, what's your story? And I was like, well, I used to be. I went on a mission, but I left the church after my mission. And she goes, oh, well, in that case, no worries. They can help you. That's fine. It was total shift. And I remember just like rolling my eyes.
You became a number to her.
Yeah.
To get this girl back to church.
So frustrated. And her husband was just like sitting there listening. And he goes, I'm really interested to hear your story. Like, if you would like, why don't you come in and talk to me? But the mission president, I was like willing to give him a chance. Go meet with him. He was friends with my buddy Wade. So the next day I went and met with him and kind of told him my story. And he was a psychologist and he just found it like fascinating, my whole experience, but he kind of related it to me, my mission, and just said, like, he talked with me on a level that was like, it just felt like he understood and he wasn't judging me. And, he spent like 4 hours talking to me, which was longer than my mission president had ever given me or expressed with me. And at the end of it, I had like 2 months before I started my teaching job. And he said, I have like a proposition for you. He said, my two favorite sisters are going home in like 7 weeks. They have their one last transfer and they were best friends and they make them companions. And he said, if I pay for everything, will you go with them and travel around to all the missions and just meet with all the sisters? And I was like, what? So weird, right? The crazy part too, had only been in South America, Argentina for a little bit. And I picked up Spanish like super fast. I told him like straight up, I don't believe in like the teaching of the church, but I believe in God and I can at least Like, I at least can share that if you're okay with that. And he's like, yeah, yeah, no, that's fine.
What was his goal behind this? Why did he want to do that?
I don't know. I honestly think it's part of, like, my experience with my God, part of the healing process, because I ended up meeting these sisters, and they had a week before they became companions, and so I went out tracting with them. The first door we knocked on was, so there's like three girls, right? All Americans, really cute girls. I wasn't very cute. They were really cute. And we knocked on the first door we knock on, which never happens. Like, this guy opens a door and we say, hey, we have a message about, you know, the church. Will you talk to us? And he lets us in. And of course he's going to, like, in retrospect, I'm like, we were three girls, like, American girls. Like, of course he's going to let us in to tell. But I connected with this guy. He was a climber. He climbed Aconcagua. He was listening to Bob Marley, which I loved, or Damian Marley. And we just, like, had beautiful pictures on the wall of, like, mountains he'd climbed. The sisters start telling him the discussion, and I'm kind of piecing it together, like, picking it up pretty quickly. And I'd only been speaking Spanish for, like, a week or two, you know. But I was understanding kind of what was going on. And then they came a point where they were like, can you share your feelings about God? And I was like, yeah, totally. So I remember relating God to climbing Aconcagua and also listening to Bob Marley or Damian Marley somehow, just getting that feeling, like, you just know there's, like, something higher than climbing the top of this mountain, or get the happy feeling and you get listening to Damian Marley. And afterwards we stood up and he gave me, like, this huge hug, and I remember thinking, gosh, I wish we could have done this on a mission, you know. Feels so good to, like, hug, like, connect with someone on that level and then just hug. And I could do it because I wasn't a missionary, and we left, and the sisters were like, do you know what he said? I was like, well, kind of. And the only reason that he let us in was because he had a feeling you had something that he needed to hear. And I totally bawled. I mean, just like, total, like, gosh, is God, like, telling me again, I got to go back to church, sort of thing. So I go out with the sisters for a while, and the mission president's like, come back to my, you know, touch base with me before we do this transition. And I went into his office, and he was like, Hillary, I just get this feeling that you should go home. Like, you shouldn't be here. You should go home, get married, have babies. Like, basically what he told me. And I remember, like, being super angry, like, don't you know, like, God's telling me to be here? I feel good about it, you know? And I was like, I don't really agree with you. And he's like, well, why don't you just talk to your dad? Because I'd given him my dad's number. I'm sure they were talking back and forth. And my dad was super paranoid about me being there. But I was like, Dad, don't worry. I ran into the mission president. It's all good, you know? And he was, like, all happy, like, awesome. So I called him up, and I remember the first thing that came out of my mouth was, Dad, will you come pick me up? Take me home for my mission. It was, like, the weirdest thing, and I didn't even plan it, and it just came out. And he was like, yeah, I'll come get you. I don't know. It was just, like, this – I felt like it was, like, my mission. Like, even the mission president made me a tag that said, like, Hermana Hillary on it. And I don't know. It was crazy. And I, like, hung up the phone, and I was just like, I don't know. That came out of nowhere, and I immediately regretted it. I was going to go home and write him an email, tell him not to come for a while. Left the mission president's office, really confused, really sad, and went home, started writing this big email to my dad, fell asleep on my computer. And then I was going to, the next day, just, I woke up, and when I opened up my email, my parents had already bought tickets to come, like, the next Thursday or something like that. I was super bummed, but I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to send the email at this point, so they're coming, doesn't matter. Yeah, so I went to church, the little friend came, I was really worried how the members would accept him, because he was, like, a Rasta, he had, like, dreads, and he was, like, dressed in white, and he was barefoot, and he brought his girlfriend, and they were both barefoot, and they, like, wore all their white, like, stinky clothes, and, like, I loved them. They're, like, hippies with, like, their jewels, and the members were super cool and just rad and embraced him, and just, like, it was, like, such a different experience that I'd ever experienced. And I don't know. I just remember like, okay, well, this is a sign again. Better go back to church. My parents come. We do a little vacation, show them around. Super depressed. I'm going home. It didn't feel like it was right. I go home. My sister had already packed up all my stuff in San Diego and moved it to Utah for me because I was planning on staying there. But I had a return flight to San Diego. So I went home to San Diego, buttoned up things at my job. They were cool because it was my dad's construction company.
They didn't have much choice.
Yeah. My boss was totally understanding. It wasn't my dad, but it was his partner. And he's just like, cool, you know, do your thing. And so I went home to Utah. And when I had gone home, right before I left, I got a phone call from one of my really good friends, Talia. We met in BYU. She was like a climbing buddy. She had struggles with eating problems, and I never really had those issues. And she had a really strong testimony of the church, and I struggled with the church. So we kind of like fed off each other all the time. We're just kind of good friends. Her mom called me and was like, Talia is pretty much on her deathbed at this point. She's like 80 pounds, her anorexia, like she's going to die. We're doing an intervention for her Sunday. Can you come? I'll buy you a ticket home. And I was like, I'm coming home this weekend. And it was just like another whoa moment, you know? So I drove straight to her intervention. And I swear if I wasn't there, she wouldn't have gone to treatment. Like I was able to convince her with her family because I was such a good friend with her. Like, I don't know. It was crazy to me. And I was just like on this euphoria, almost like this high. So many coincidences to be a coincidence. Like, okay, the mission president had it right. I better go home. Okay, better go back to church. And so immediately moved in with my parents. She went to treatment. I was going to get my master's in eating disorders, you know, something to like help her. It was just like really intense. And I remember going back to church, same issues, feelings, you know, no resolution, just same priesthood, not feeling equal, nothing. Like I remember drinking one night and then feeling like, oh, I should probably talk to the bishop about it. And I was like, screw that. Why should I talk to the bishop about something that I can just talk to my own God about? And I don't even think it's that big of a deal. It's just against Mormon land. Sorry, that's what I call it, Mormon land stuff. And I remember feeling like I have an issue with the church and not letting gay people have the same rights, you know, marriage. And I remember like that kind of snuck in there when I was on this high and I didn't know how to like, you know, let it go sort of thing because it was an issue, I believe. Anyway, and I did try go back to church, but again, I didn't have the resolution, you know. And then during that time, I was also talking with a therapist. My parents were generous and to help me get through my mission because I was still hung up on my mission. But having like that mini mission in Argentina, like really helped me to let go and heal. And the therapist were able to help me see like that my mission was for me what I needed to help me find the balance. Till maybe I had to, cause I was so crazy. I needed like to break down and kind of like this, all these experiences have been for me to like help me heal. And so finally I was able to like let go of that pain from my mission a bit. It's still a little bit there. I think it is for everybody. Kind of hold on. You don't forget. I guess now, like I've gone back to church a few times, but it's not like I don't feel like I go back out of curiosity to see where I'm at. And I'm always at that place where my mind doesn't let me think. And now I'm kind of just have this peace. Yeah.
Do you continue to look for signs? Like what if you go home now and the missionaries knock on the door? Do you take that as a sign?
I don't think I look at it as a sign so much as I do now feel like the God I believe in has allowed me to heal through ways and experiences that I can relate and to the place where I can have total peace now. Like I'm really at a good place now in my life where I feel completely fine with being at a church meeting. It doesn't bother me, but I don't believe it. I can see the truth in some of the human nature, you know, like the good and what's in all religions, but I also can just see like where I don't participate in it. I guess I've been able to like have so many life experiences where I can now just, I'm at peace with it. And I think therapy helped a lot.
Yeah.
And even listening to a lot of the Mormon expression stories, like when Jetta sent me the link to hers, I listened to like, I think I nonstop forever. And I wish I had this when I was leaving the church because I feel like I didn't have anyone that could relate to me. And since then I've like emailed it out to like a bunch of my friends that have kind of come to me because they've left the church too. Like my good friend in San Diego, Cynthia, one of the two girls I met, she left the church and I was like the first person that she could talk to about it. And just a bunch of interesting, like I have had some elders from my mission, leave Jetta, obviously.
And when you say the God that you believe in, your God,
mm-hmm.
do you see it as a Christian God or what?
I don't believe in Christ, I guess.
Okay.
I feel like he existed, but I'm not sure his divinity. And I don't feel like he understood what it's like to be a woman or to lose all of your beliefs 100%, like lose everything. So I never really related to that image or that teaching.
Do you see God that way though?
God to me kind of almost is, I like to talk to him like in him, like he's a person, but at the same time it's evolved to be kind of the universe, I guess, or I'm not exactly sure his role. I know there's been too many coincidences in my life to be a coincidence. And I definitely feel like there's some divinity in like kind of my background, but I'm not exactly sure. I feel good about just like believing in like some sort of higher power.
So, well, I'm glad you were able to find that peace. It was a long road.
Yes. It's been a long road. It's been a really long road. That's about it. I still have my name in the church, but I've already drafted my letter of resignation, so I haven't submitted it yet. Still waiting for that moment kind of thing.
All right. Well, thanks for spending this time with us. And if you would also like to share your story like Hillary, go ahead and email me at voices@mormonexpression.com. And also, I want to mention again that if I've missed you, if you've reached out to me and I haven't set up a time for your interview, it's not because I don't want to talk to you. It's just that over the last several months, things have gotten behind or I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, if you still want to talk to me, send me another email. I'd be happy to set it up with you. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Have a good day. Bye. Tripled commotion, sudden coincidence creates.